How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I'm okay. You know, it's a little chilly here. Very sunny. It's very sunny out. So it's very, you think, ooh, it's not. And you go outside and it's cold.
It's like cold.
30. Yeah. It's pretty chilly out
there.
Well,
good. It's winter. It's supposed to be that way, right?
It is.
Some January's here. It's in the negatives. And or it could be worse, too. We could live somewhere where our face hurts all the time when we walk outside.
Your face hurts me all the time.
I know. Well, your face kills me. Arr, 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 arr. That was my dad's joke for me all the time. Hey, Jennifer, does your face hurt? No. Well, it's killing me. Hey, I heard you got something for us today.
Oh, Jen?
There's a rumor.
Let me tell you something. This might be one of the... Well, it's right up there. Let me tell you. This is one of the...
I bet you it's
worst?
A humdinger. Is it a humdinger?
It is.
I bet you it's a humdinger.
I was trying not to say that word because sometimes it fits. Let me just preface this by saying there is incest in this, so it could be a little triggering for certain people. It's awful. True. So you ready to go?
Mm-hmm.
So today we venture to Florida. To a crime story, which is hard to believe. And might I add that I believe this case is unlike anything else we've ever done. And when I say it has all the evil things in the world tossed into one, I am not kidding. Mm. Eddie Sexton was an ordained minister, so all those in town knew him, and he was the go-to guy who could marry you fast and with little fuss. Now, Eddie and his wife, Estella May, had 12 children in all.
Holy cow.
7 boys and 5 girls.
Poor Eddie Ella May. That's her name, Ella? Poor Estella May.
Estella with an E on the front. Yep. Eddie would arrive with all the kids in tow to marry a couple right there at their home, often on the front lawn. The children were often part of the audience, dressed in their Sunday best, smiling from ear to ear. Eddie's wife, Estella, would often be found in the kitchen, cooking away to present a nice meal for the married couple and their guest. From the outside, this large, church-going family seemed to be an ideal family. But we all know, Jen, looks can be deceiving, and in this case, twisted and deadly.
Ugh. I'm done with it now.
Sit back, put your seatbelt on, you're going to need it, I'm telling you, because it's terrible. Eddie Lee Sexton was born to a long line of coal miners just outside of Logan, West Virginia. His call to be a minister came from his father, who was a part-time Baptist minister. His love of God did not stop his criminal tendencies because, in 1963, he married his 15-year-old girlfriend, who happened to be pregnant, and the very next day, he went out and committed armed robbery of a gas station. Now, Eddie was sent to prison for 5 years, and after giving birth to their son, named Patrick, thank goodness, his wife filed for divorce. It was sometime after his release, he met a woman named Estella, whom he would marry and eventually have 12 children, raising them in Stark County, Ohio. So our story starts in Ohio, ends in Florida. Eddie was ever the con man. He could be charming and sweet to get what he wanted, but if that didn't work, he would be ruthless and cruel. It didn't matter to him how he got what he wanted, only that he got it. Eddie had injured his back so severely that he claimed he couldn't work, so he collected disability. But he made extra money working around people's homes or as a painter. Obviously, his back wasn't hurt too bad.
Yeah.
There was this little issue of his house burning down, but thank goodness he had insurance, so he collected insurance.
Oh, yeah.
This was in the 1980s.
Sure, it was an accident that his house burned down.
It was. The first time, Jen.
Oh, okay.
There was another house that burnt to the ground. And again, thank goodness, he collected insurance money. You know, maybe it's just a really big string of bad luck or good insurance, but wouldn't you know it, Jen? Eddie had another house burned down. That's three.
You're kidding me.
Three houses mysteriously caught on fire and burnt to the ground. Well, thank goodness, again, he could collect insurance on that last house, too. This string of bad luck just seemed to be continuing because, you know, all those houses burnt to the ground. But guess what? In between all those unexplained fires, there was a series of burglaries that happened to his home in between. But again, thank goodness he had insurance because
with all these fires, when did they have time to make babies? Maybe that's what started the fire.
Right?
Yeah. Too much friction. All right. Sorry. All right. Go.
It's okay. It was in the 1970s that he decided he would become a preacher. Now, this preacher was not quite like any other preachers I know about. It was a bit of Christianity tied in with some other things, such as Satanism and a little bit of the occult.
Oh,
yeah. He's a little different sort of preacher, if you will. Now, he would use what he liked from each of his religions and twist it to make it work for him. Eddie would tell tales that would frighten the children, stories about how Satan was just waiting for them and ready to attack them. But as long as they did everything their father told them to do, they would be protected.
That's shameful.
Thank you. At first, Eddie was a believer in the Bible, but that faith soon morphed into something very much different. He began to tell his family that he was the only God they will ever know. He would use his fear to make his children do whatever he said, no matter what it was that he said. His love of religion began to turn to the dark side as well. Now, here's a little story that one of his sons on Evil Lives Here, which I love that show, and we're going to get to this. This is his son, Charlie. But he tells a story about what happened. And just a little warning, there's a little animal torture here. Charlie says that one night his dad, Eddie, told the family to gather around the table. Now, mind you, there's 12 of them, and he kept a tight leash on all of them. So, of course, they're all there. As they gathered around the table had candles on it with a pentagram painted in the middle. In the middle of the pentagram, there was a towel with something underneath it.
No. Okay.
So
you can see it forward. Yeah.
I don't get to the graphic part,
okay,
but you need the gist of this. Eddie comes into the room, and instead of being dressed in his minister attire, he's wearing a black cloak, almost like a cape. He enters the room, and he removes the towel, and from the table, you can see it was the family cat. Eddie picked up the pet, slit its throat, and poured the blood into a glass. He then passed the glass around and made, or should I say forced, each child, as well as his wife, to drink from the cup. Now, they all obeyed as they were taught or forced to. And when they were finished, lights back on, and he threatened all of them that no matter what, you never talk to anyone about this. And if they did, there would be hell to pay with a severe punishment.
Yeah.
Using fear and religion. How many times has this been done in history? Over, over, and over. Things in this hell house were getting much worse. The invisible chains Eddie kept on his family got even tighter. None of the children were allowed more than one friend at a time, like ever. The kids were not allowed to bring any friends to the home or go to any friends' houses. The older children weren't even allowed to work. Eddie began beating his children regularly, and he convinced the children that he had supernatural powers and could summon ghosts and spirits at his pleasure. Of course, he would use this information to scare them, so they would submit to whatever he wanted. And he wanted a lot, let's be honest. The children were allowed to leave for school and come straight home. No delays, or they would pay. Eddie, and this is a little story here, Eddie gave his sons money, and he told them to watch out for their sisters, and if they saw their sisters talking to anyone, and this is more such as authority figures, teachers, adults, if you will, that they needed to call him immediately. Now, as a child, I know you have to think that this is not right, but what they couldn't know was why Eddie was so adamant about the girls not talking to anyone. But that would soon come to the surface. One afternoon, one of the boys saw their sister Sherry talking to a teacher in the hallway. The conversation seemed like a serious one. So as instructed, Charles called his father to tell him what he saw, that he saw his sister Sherry talking with the teacher, and it looked very intense, if you will. When Eddie came home, he grabbed his young daughter and took her to the bedroom, where he beat her so severely for all the others to hear. They just sat and listened to her screams. Eddie Sexton and his wife had long been suspected of abuse, and authorities even kept a file on the family since 1979. But we all know that's kind of hard to prove, right? Especially if you're not letting anyone in your house, you won't let your family associate with anybody. In fact, neighbors would say that they didn't even know their last name for years, and they lived right by him.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Sherry paid the ultimate price, and that was the price she paid for potentially letting outsiders know their family secrets. And Jen, there were so many secrets. Secrets that bonded them as a family, secrets that carry a heavy burden, which, unbeknownst to them, many of them were carrying the very same burden. Now, this is a little tough to hear, but here we go, because that's the story. One afternoon after school, a few of the boys went downstairs. They wanted to get a board game, and they wanted to play Yahtzee or Monopoly, whatever it is. They hear some mumbling, and they quietly creep down. You know, they think they're being slick or sly, because they're young kids. They creep down the stairs, and what they witness is Eddie molesting his daughter. Now, he wasn't just molesting her. He was full-on
raping her.
He was raping her. Correct. Her name is also Estella, but she went by the nickname Pixie. Now, sickening and shocking as it was, they were all too familiar with this because they too had been molested by their father. If that's not about the worst of the worst, it's going to get what? That's right, even worse. One day, when all the family was home and they're all just kind of hanging out, playing, having a good time, Pixie enters the room and she's dressed in a white dress. All white dress, complete with a veil. Family stops and they're all staring at her, not sure what is really going on. Now, mind you, the mom's in there too. Trailing behind her was Eddie. Eddie announced to the family that he was going to marry Pixie, mm-hmm. his 17-year-old daughter. They held hands in the living room as Eddie married himself to his teenage daughter. Pixie seemed to be thrilled to be marrying her father. But the blessed newlyweds didn't stay newlyweds for long because Eddie decided to marry another one of his daughters too, and then another one. But you know what they say, first comes love, then comes marriage, then comes your own daughter pregnant with your baby? Yes, not kidding, sick stuff here. Pixie was 17 years old and pregnant while still living at home with her father's baby. Eddie, he knew he had to come up with some sort of story. Pregnant daughter, there's no guys around, never lets anybody in the house, kids never go anywhere. People didn't really know him, but you still would find that odd, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie decided he would tell people that came sniffing around that the baby was actually that of a young man who went, dated Pixie quickly, and then he joined the service right after she got pregnant. So that seemed easy enough. But Jen, when Pixie ended up pregnant again, about a year later, he couldn't use that same guy because the guy's supposed to be in the service. That was obviously a lie. He told people that it was a boy she went to high school with. Now, she's still in high school with two little babies from her father. Mm-hmm.
That makes me ill.
Things take even another turn when, what? She ends up pregnant again with baby number three while still in high school. At this point, people are starting to take note. The teachers, it is kind of unusual when you have a little girl at school who has three babies and doesn't really have a boyfriend or any friends or anybody or does anything. So people are starting to kind of nose around. Eddie decides he needs a better plan and he needs somebody to blame these babies on. Enter high school boy Joel Good. Now, Joel went to school with Pixie, as well as all of her other siblings in high school. Eddie needed Joel to step in and be the father to Pixie's newest baby and actually make it legal. Now, this, of course, was just a front to get people to leave Eddie alone and keep those dark secrets just that secret. Is this terrible or what?
He's a monster.
He really is.
Well, I think there's a lot of mental issues with this, too.
Obviously, but I think he ran his house like a cult, you know?
But he was also allowed to.
Mm-hmm.
So
you
there
think
was...
that. Okay, so we're going to talk about that at the end because there's something that in the Evil Lives Here story. We're going to get to that. Pixie did her job to make Joel think she loved him and that baby was actually Joel's baby. Now, Joel, being a nice person, wanted to do right by Pixie, and he wanted to marry Pixie. They would appear to be the happy family now, a married senior in high school pregnant with their third baby, whom Joel thinks is his baby. I don't know how they worked that. I guess that had to be pretty, I don't know, not good math. I don't know.
Sometimes you just want it to be so badly that you accept it, maybe.
I think so, too. Eddie's delusional world began to worsen as he thought that he needed to prepare his family for the upcoming fight with the world, in particular, the police. Eddie believed that the police were going to fight him and his family, and they needed to be prepared for the battle. He purchased weapons, and he would hold meetings with the family, instructing them on how to use all these weapons he bought. He would also demonstrate to them how to best kill a person quickly and swiftly. Could you imagine? My dad taught me how to kill somebody. Perhaps Eddie knew that the police would soon be knocking on his door, and he was correct. Eddie's daughter, Michelle, went to an authority figure at her school and told them about the horrific life she and her siblings had been living. Go, Michelle. I mean, that had to take some guts.
Mm-hmm. It did, especially when she would know that they'd all turn on her and she'd be alone in the world. Mm-hmm.
Police arrive at the door, and they tell Eddie he needs to leave immediately, and he would no longer be permitted to live there or see his children. Eddie, of course, threw a fit and denied it all, but they weren't having it, thank goodness. Eddie was led away by police, but sadly, he would not stay away for long. He was determined that this was his house, of course he was, and he would not be leaving it without a fight, and that's just what happened. Police learned that Eddie was visiting the house when he was not supposed to. You know, he was supposed to stay away all the time. Well, it turns out he would pretty much come to the house every single night and stay the night. Police knew that this would not be an easy task to get him out, and they knew that he would not leave on his own. So here we go. It was November 21st, 1992, when Eddie defied the courts. He came back to the house yet again. Eddie, in fact, called a local TV station and threatened to kill anyone who came onto his property, because he feared they would take his kids away again, and this time,
as they should, but
permanently.
Yes.
Of course, the TV station, this is where the media kills me, they carry it live, so now everybody knows. They're watching this like a bad reality show, right? Eddie barricades himself and his family in his home for over 7 hours. People evacuate the entire street and nearby houses. Now, while they're doing that, Eddie was arming his sons with rifles and instructing them to kill the police should he give the signal. So the young men point their guns out the window, and they waited for the sign from their father that would end the lives of the police officers. The phone rang, and Eddie picks it up. It was a deputy that asked him to come outside. Just want to talk. I just want to talk to you, Eddie. Now, Eddie complied, but he told the boys, keep an eye on me, because if I give you the sign, shoot away. Take them all out. Can you imagine? These officers go to work, and they deal with this, and lunatics like this. Eddie goes outside, and the deputy was actually able to talk to him and calm him down, which was awesome, and eventually even take him into custody. No one died that day. The standoff came to an end when they agreed to his wishes. You ready? A new caseworker. He doesn't like the one they have. Say what? Yeah, thank you. You're molesting 12 of your children, and you don't like your caseworker? Okay. Eddie Sexton was charged with felony, abduction, and misdemeanor offenses of endangering children and inducing panic. Okay. After posting a $7,500 bond, Sexton was free 6 days later. When he appeared in court the next week, the abduction charge was dropped because the family had gone into hiding and they would not testify against him. They should have seen that coming with the way he ruled his family.
But what can you do? I mean, yeah, they're trying to follow the law. They can't.
Yep. He pleaded no contest to the misdemeanors, but the municipal judge, Eugene Thelmuth, suspended his 180-day jail sentence and placed Sexton on probation.
What?
Probably the worst thing he could have done. The guy is already sneaking back into the house every day. His family won't testify against him. They're scared to death of him. What do you think's going to happen? Well, I'm about to tell you, Jen. When Eddie got home, he loaded up the car. This is day one, right when he got out. He loaded up the car and he took the family, including Pixie, her husband Joel, and the kids, both the older kids, and the new baby, 9-month-old son named Skipper. And they head to Tampa, which they're going to go head down there, kind of hide out and stay with Eddie's sister. Now, of course, that didn't last too long. Never does, right? So they move again and load up the car. This time they end up at Hillsboro River State Park Campground. And this is where they're going to hide out for a while. Family arrives and set up camp, or in this case, prison, because it really is prison. While the Sextons were hiding out, Johnny Law was working overtime. The case was referred to the county prosecutor's multi-agency task force on child abuse for criminal prosecution. Thank goodness. A few months after that, the family court gave five of the Sexton children to Human Services for permanent custody. And I guess that pretty much just means, you know, they became a ward of the state. A month after that placement, the grand jury met in secret, sort of, and they filed criminal indictments against Eddie and Estella Sexton. Eddie was charged with four counts each of rape and sexual imposition, and two counts each of sexual battery and child endangerment. His wife was charged with gross sexual imposition and child endangerment. The couple also faced federal warrants for unlawful flight to avoid prosecution because, you know, they're in a campground in Florida and should be back in Ohio, but okay. I don't mean to be sarcastic. I just...
No, I know. It's
angry making, it is, yeah. You know? Unaware of what the grand jury had come up with, the Sextons, you know, they're living their campground totally unaware. The family was not there for very long before good old Eddie came up with a scheme. Eddie needed a new identity since, you know, he was on the run from the police. Eddie, along with his family members, specifically his son, Willie Sexton, decided they're going to murder a campground resident by the name of Raymond Hesser. Now, William, or Willie as he was known, was developmentally delayed, making it even easier for Eddie to rule over him and force him to comply with his wicked plans, time and time again. Now, Willie, who was also sexually abused by his father throughout his entire childhood, actually would end up spending more than a year in a mental institution. He was said to operate on the level of approximately an 8-year-old child. Now, Eddie's plan was this. Eddie would assume the man's identity, and bam, he wouldn't be a fugitive anymore, Jen. That easy. He's going to kill the guy, take over his identity, and then he's going to steal the dead guy's truck along with his camper. It's a nice camper. It's a nice truck. They're going to have a new house at the campground. Seems pretty easy. Seems like the perfect plan, but luckily it did not come to fruition because there was another more pressing matter to deal with at that moment. Thank goodness for Raymond Hesser, really, right?
Mm-hmm.
As the family are settling in and with tempers flaring because you're at a campground, it's not long before tragedy would appear. Baby Skipper was sick, as babies get, and it had been a few days now. Joel, his, I guess I was going to say his dad, but, you know, poor Joel, who thought he was the baby's dad, wanted to take the baby to the doctor, but Eddie wouldn't allow it, of course, because, you know, he's afraid that Joel would say something or the authorities would figure that out, find them. The baby's crying a lot because the poor little thing doesn't feel good and because that's what babies do. Eddie's furious. He cannot stand to hear the baby screaming anymore. So he screams at Pixie to shut that baby up, or he would. Pixie puts her hand over the baby's mouth, and perhaps to quiet him down, or perhaps to alleviate the poor thing from enduring the life that they had all lived up to this point. The baby's crying stopped, and Pixie's crying started. Pixie's siblings rush to her, and they can see that the baby is blue and no longer breathing. Pixie's screaming and hollering at this point as her brothers and sisters just stood there. Eddie bends over, picks up a backpack, and tosses it to Pixie, announcing, "The baby's gone. Put the baby in the duffel bag. You're done." Pixie's crying and doesn't want to do this, but Pixie does what she's always done, which is obey her father. She puts that sweet baby boy inside the bag with a pacifier in its mouth and a toy, like a little toy rattler. Like, I saw a picture of the outfit afterwards, and with complete with the toys. Put a little rattle in its hand to be buried with.
It's heartbreaking.
Once that was done, Eddie ordered his two sons to bury the infant back behind the campground site, you know, somewhere in the woods, in a duffel bag, like a backpack. Are you kidding me? The two sons complied, knowing that they had to, or else. Perhaps because he had been the ruthless dictator for so long and everyone just did what he said, Eddie barked orders and his family jumped. However, Eddie forgot that one of these people at the campsite, Jen, was not actually related to him. And he didn't grow up like this. And so he's not going to be so easily willing to do what Eddie says, right?
He's not a follower.
With all of this happening, Jen, Eddie, he needed to be back in charge, right? Things were getting a little wild. Eddie needed a plan. If this has not been a twisted, sick story already, fasten your seatbelts as it's about to get worse. Eddie gathers two of his sons and he orders them to the car. Eddie had a plan, and that plan was to get another baby to replace the one that had just died.
No.
Now, they're
easy to replace. I mean, it's just like,
well, wait till you hear who he tries again.
A sweater.
Talk about people that I'm telling you. What they're going to do is they're going to go to take a little road trip back to Ohio real quick. They're going to go see Eddie Sexton Jr. Now, that's the eldest son. He's the oldest of the children. And thank goodness the guy was like, yeah, I'm out of here. And he ventured out on his own, which is code for escaped. And he was living back in Ohio with his wife. The couple had started a family, and in fact, they had an infant son, Jen. Eddie handed a gun to his other son and told him, this is what you're going to do. You're going to go to the front door, you're going to knock on the door, and when Eddie Jr. opens the door, now this is his child he's talking about, right? And he's talking to his other son about his brother. You're going to shoot him dead, and you're going to steal his new baby boy. That's right. Here's a gun. You're going to go shoot your brother, my oldest son, and you're going to steal his baby. And I don't even know what to say.
He's lost all reason sanity. I mean, that doesn't even make sense what I saw, but he's just lost his mind completely.
Right. Of course, the son, the boy, he knew that he had to do this because if you didn't do what Eddie wanted, you're going to die. I'm sure this kid is like shaking and saying, what am I doing? But he does. He gets out of the car, walks up to the door, knocks on the door. Thankfully, no one was home. Oh my gosh. Could you imagine?
I can't. It's insane.
Since that plan failed, thank goodness, they head back to Florida to meet up with the rest of the family. But now they're wondering what they're going to do about Joel, because Joel's not going to be happy knowing, I guess, that his baby's dead. Eddie had to go now with his plan B. If he could not get a new baby and convince Joel that the baby was, in fact, his son that he just had murdered, basically, he had to get rid of Joel. Joel was the squeaky wheel, and Eddie convinced his sons that Joel would ruin all of this by going and telling the police all about the situation and about the baby. So during all of this, of course, when they're traveling to and from, Joel's going to find this out. Joel arrived back at the camp after Eddie and his sons had left to go kill Eddie Jr. and steal his baby. He's horrified to find out what happened. Joel demanded that he and Pixie return to Ohio with their other kids, and Pixie then broke down and was crying and told Joel the truth. Those two other girls weren't actually fathered by some high school boy and some enlisted kid. Those two kids were actually fathered by her very own father. And Eddie would never allow them to live alive. He would kill Pixie. He would rather kill Pixie and kill her family than to live without her, because that's the kind of that's how Eddie ran his world. Could you imagine hearing this information? And they're fathered from your father-in-law is the father of your stepchildren.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. Eddie obviously is beyond being able to even comprehend this. He's like, listen, Pixie, you're coming with me, or I'm going to turn you in for murdering our son, Skipper. Of course, tensions rise, as did their voices. Joel would not and could not allow his baby to be buried in the dirt and left there. Joel wanted his baby to be dug back up, and he wanted to go take the baby. This is weird, too. Take the baby in and drop it off at a police station. Now, Eddie, as we all know, good old Eddie, is no fan of police. Or anybody that's sane, really, for that matter. And he cannot and will not allow this to happen. And this is where plan B starts, with him needing to get rid of Joel.
No one's safe.
Really isn't. It's crazy. Because Joel was the squeaky wheel, Eddie convinced his sons that Joel would turn them in. He's going to ruin their whole plan. Eddie orders his son, Willie, to take Joel for a walk. You're going to take Joel for a walk in the woods. Very casually. It's going to be, you know, fun. And while you're out there, we're going to stay here at the campsite. when you get in the woods, you're going to take this rope and you're going to place it around Joel's neck and you're going to pull. You're going to kill Joel. Now, remember, Willie functions pretty much, has the mind capacity of an 8-year-old. Thinking about an 8-year-old trying to kill somebody, I can't even understand that.
They're so obedient. Mm-hmm. That's mind-numbing. I can't even get my kids to pick the towel off the floor, much less kill somebody for me.
Willie and Joel are in the woods. Willie does what he was instructed to do. He had a piece of rope, sort of, I guess it's kind of like a garrote is the way I'm thinking it was. Eddie taught him how to put a piece of rope and then like take tools at the end and you pull it. Homemade garrote, I guess. And he does just that. Joel falls to the ground and he dies. Eddie instructs Willie along with Charles or Charlie to now go take Joel out and bury him in the same woods right by where his son Skipper is buried. During this time, police were still trying to find Eddie and his family, and they finally had some luck. On January 14th, 1994, the FBI located the family at the Little Manatee River State Park. Now, I found two different accounts of how this went down. Both of them, well, both of it's Eddie's fault. He's an idiot. The first circumstance is that Eddie once heard that the police were after him. He began calling the Stark County authorities, and he was trying to cut a deal. He would turn himself in if the charges against his wife were dropped and the children were allowed to remain with her. Oh, and money would constantly be provided for the family. Okay. Instead, authorities, you know, they kept talking to him. Yeah, Eddie, that sounds great. That's great. Well, what they were doing, of course, was tracing his calls. And they were able to trace them to a phone booth right outside the campsite at the Little Manatee River wreck area. The second account. These are different places that I read. Both of them, like I said, are Eddie's fault. So that's why I included them, because he's an idiot. The other is that he was making phone calls from the park and they were being traced. They were being traced because what they did is they put taps on his family's phones. Eddie was calling his brother-in-law because his brother-in-law sold them a car that they made their getaway in. But it seems cheap little Eddie decided, you know what? I don't feel like paying for this. So he just quit making payments on the car. Well, the brother-in-law was, I don't think so, pal. So he goes and he reports the car stolen. Now, they were able to trace those phone calls, again, back to Little Manatee River wreck area. You know, he's cheap, and so he gets caught, or he's a jerk and he gets caught, either or. In either scenario, the FBI were waiting and watching, and then the FBI made their move on January 14th. One day when Eddie and his wife left the campground, they were arrested. Eddie and his wife were charged with multiple crimes, but, Jen, the police were unaware of the murders of the baby and of Joel. Police began to suspect something was amiss when Joel Good's aunt had reported to authorities that she had not spoken to Joel in a long time, and that was unlike her nephew. They don't know what happened to Joel. After the arrest of the Sextons, police had taken three minor children into custody. They took the two mothers with the three children, two of which are Eddie's. The mothers were adults, and therefore they were free to go. And this would be Pixie and her sister. They were free to go because there were no charges against them. The oldest sibling, named Eddie Jr., you know, the one that they were going to kill, that one.
Yeah.
He drove to Florida to try to get Willie and Pixie and the other children to come with him. He wanted to bring them all back to Ohio. He had lived through that awful life. He knew what they put up with. Willie and Pixie refused to go, but two of the others went with Eddie Jr., and that was an 18-year-old boy, Charles, who we talked about with Willie up there, and a 21-year-old sister and her child. And they all returned with Eddie Jr. to Ohio. Both of the adult children spoke to authorities, the 21-year-old and the 18-year-old Charles. They talked to authorities, but the first go-around, they were not totally honest with police. It was a few days later that Charles came to Eddie Jr., and he broke down, and he confided in Eddie about what happened at that Florida campground, that two family members were dead, and they were actually buried in the woods right there behind the campground. Of course, Eddie Jr. says, you have to go. You have to go talk to authorities. You can't keep this. You just can't. You're not in trouble. You know, your father's in prison. You're not in trouble anymore. 18-year-old Charles agrees to talk to the Stark County Sheriff's Department as long as he was given immunity. Charles tells police that Joel Good and Skipper Good were both dead. He was able to show them where they were each buried in those woods behind the campground, and he would even eventually take them to the burial sites. Charles did not hold back, and he would tell them all of the atrocities his family had been through over the years. So here we go to the trial. During the trial, the details were filled in, but some of the siblings contradicted each other. Regarding the death of Joel Good, Pixie would testify that on that day Joel died, that Joel and Willie went for a walk. After they did not come back right away, Pixie says that she and her sister Sherry went to look for them. They heard some shouting and made their way to the men. When they arrived, they witnessed Willie strangling Joel with a rope around his neck. Pixie says that she then ran to get her dad, Eddie, and bring him to the men. Once Eddie arrived and noticed that Joel was still alive, he told Willie to finish the job. Sherry Sexton, the sibling, had a different story on the stand, and it went like this. She said that Pixie helped Willie kill Joel, and that her father, Eddie, was actually upset that this happened, was not happy that Willie had murdered Joel, but that Pixie was very happy Joel was dead.
Really?
Yes. And I think I tend to believe that story. I'm just saying.
That she was happy that he was dead?
Uh-huh. They both agreed on the stand that Eddie sent Pixie to the store to buy a shovel, and then Eddie and Willie used that shovel to bury Joel. Eddie had told Willie that he needed to cut off the hands of Joel to eliminate IDing the boy, but Willie was not able to cut them off. Strength-wise, like he didn't have the strength, because it's a lot harder than you think. Joel's autopsy would reveal a deep cut on his right hand and ligature marks around his neck, indicating that he was strangled to death. Eddie's eldest brother, Otis Sexton, and his wife actually picketed the county courthouse back in July of 1992. Now, this was before he was arrested. This was before he got caught. He was upset. He wanted his brother arrested for child abuse. So he and his wife were picketing the courthouse, carrying signs that said arrest child abusers, and he was actually handing out pamphlets to passersby because he was upset that the county had not charged his brother with these crimes yet. You know what I'm saying? There you go.
Mm-hmm. I do know what you're saying.
You know that's pretty bad when your own brother is wanting you arrested for this. Otis said his suspicions were aroused about 6 years ago during a camping trip that the families would go to RV parks and camp. Eddie would always park his RV right by Otis, like their family, you know, they're camping out, they're having a good time. But this one particular time, Eddie parked his RV far away from Otis and Otis's family, claiming that Otis was too loud. What? Now, in reality, it was because Eddie wanted his family in that RV away from him so that he could do whatever he needed to do to control his family and or abuse them. And it comes to this. I wouldn't even know how to handle this if this was my kid, and you'll understand here in a minute. Otis tells a story about how one night, two of his daughters went over to babysit all of Eddie's younger kids. Seems Eddie and his wife were going to go out for a little while, if you can believe that. He dropped off the two girls. Everything's fine. He had just gotten back home when he receives a phone call from his daughter, who was obviously upset. She was panicked because she says when she arrived to watch the kids, several of them had been tied down in their beds.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Otis also said this little tidbit, and this is, it goes back to what I said about Joel earlier. He added that Joel Good had told him that Pixie and he never had sex. Pixie didn't want it. Pixie would always push him away. And that was a quote. 56-year-old Eddie Sexton came to court weak and in a wheelchair, and not like the Munster. 56-year-old Eddie Sexton came to court weak and in a wheelchair, and not the monster he once was who thrived on molesting and beating his children. Eddie was sentenced to death on November 2, 1994, for the murder of his daughter's husband, Joel Good. Eddie simply nodded his head after hearing the sentence, and he said, "That's life." Right?
Well, you got death, nope. So
yep. That's death,
not
buddy.
Life. That's not life. That's death.
I counted on you saying that when I wrote that because I just figured I could hear you in my head. However, sadly, the verdict was overturned and a new trial was ordered after the Florida Supreme Court ruled that the jury should have never heard all the bizarre details surrounding the way Eddie Sexton's children grew up and how Eddie ran the house. He got a new trial based on that.
I wonder why.
Waste
I mean,
of
I wonder
taxpayers'
what,
money.
No, but I mean, I wonder why that wasn't allowed, why it shouldn't have been brought up.
I'm guessing because that had nothing to do with the murder of Jewel Good. But it did, but it didn't.
I would think it would show how he controlled the kids.
Exactly. And how that all, it came to that ending. And that's why I think it's relevant. Thank goodness, Eddie was found guilty and sentenced to death on November 18th, 1998. His victims, sadly, would never see justice from dying by the state. But death came to Eddie Lee Sexton as he died of natural causes in prison December 29th, 2010. In October 2017, his wife, Estella Mae Sexton, 70, also died in prison of natural causes. Now, a movie had been planned out by a major production studio in Hollyweird about the Sextons and their life. However, one child would not agree to it. They would not sign off on it. So the movie never got made, which I honestly thank you, because I think that it would just be a terrible, awful to watch on TV. Pixie would serve 6 years in prison for her part in smothering her baby. William, or Willie Sexton, was convicted of second-degree murder for the murder of Jewel Good on November 17th, 1993. Willie was sentenced to 25 years. And before actually heading to prison, he would take a stopover at the mental hospital for somewhat over a year before going to prison. Circuit Judge J. Rogers Paget stated in court, "The evidence clearly showed the dominance of the defendant over his simple-minded son, achieved by a lifetime of cruel, insidious, and humiliating physical, emotional, and sexual abuse." So that is the story of Eddie Sexton. Now, here's
I can't say I'm sad he's dead.
Me neither. Couple things.
Mm-hmm.
I started this little journey by watching, as I mentioned, Evil Lives Here, which I love that show and they need to pay me, but that's another story. And I've watched every single one of every single season, so I'm out. But Charlie, they interviewed Charlie for the show, or Charles. Now, Charles was the one at 18 who talked to authorities in as long as he had immunity. And this is where I said you're going to have a couple choice words here, Jen. I understand that the family had been put through so much during their life. Obviously, their mental, they cannot think like normal people, really. But in there, in the interview, Charles, he kind of cries, and he states that his mom really had nothing to do with any of this, and she was innocent. And I about kicked the TV. I'm sorry. You know, he married his daughters. Two of them had babies by their father, by her husband. And I understand that she was, I would kill him in his sleep. There's no way. She was not innocent. I mean, I understand that he mentally controlled her, but there's mentally controlling you is one thing. But once you molest and rape your daughters and sons, like, come on.
I believe that there's probably some kind of, don't want to necessarily say self-esteem issue with her, or that she had, or maybe she was beaten down. Maybe she had a bit of mental illness herself. I don't believe she's innocent at all. She should have stepped up and said something. But until you're in an abusive relationship, I don't really know if we could pass judgment on that. But I agree. She should have, as a mother, protected her children and said something and gotten the hell out of there. But I wasn't there either. So I
you are much nicer about it than I am.
I'm trying to put myself in her position. I mean, here she is. She's with a man that she loves. He's mentally unstable. I'm sure she loves her past.
And all the kids. And I mean love in the love way, not love as in a father way.
What if she's like little Willie herself? We don't know her mental capabilities. We don't know where she's
but
been.
Even eight-year-olds know that's not right. They know that's not
But
right.
If you've been taught that, you only know what you're taught. I mean, it might seem weird, but if your dad tells you it's okay to marry your, that he could marry your sister, and you don't have any other context from the outside world, sure, why not? Doesn't seem that's wrong.
They went to school, so it wasn't like they were, you know, they were forbidden to not do all that, but they did go to school, so they did get out of the house a little bit.
No, there's a reason why cults are cults and people are brainwashed. Mm-hmm. I believe that the mother was guilty. I believe she needed to go to prison. I believe that Charles believes that his mother's innocent in all of this. Brainwashing is a hell of a thing.
Charles has his own family, and from what he says, he could never imagine doing this to his own children.
No.
So there's some peace in that for me, that people can move on and have a normal life with that, because I would say pretty much all those kids would be damaged, and hopefully
the cycle can be broken.
Yeah,
and
I hope
gone.
So.
I wonder if Charles had to do a mass amount of therapy to get uncontrolled by his father. I'm sure Eddie was a scary man to have to deal with, too.
I told you, he looked... He just looked like the devil. He really did. Like, he just looked like a pervert. He looked... When you think of a incestuous, domineering father that beats and abuses his children and uses fear in the Bible, that you think of the person that looks like that, that's what he looks like.
You mean David Koresh type?
No. David Koresh at least had a little charm, sort of. Charm in a gross kind of way. But no, this guy just looks like... He's just smarmy. Ugh.
I don't know.
Not that I judge a book by a cover, but sometimes I do.
You do. Everybody judges a book by its cover.
If there's any judgment to be had, it would be on Eddie, right?
Yeah, he was a monster.
His own brother picketed for them to arrest his brother. That's pretty bad.
Well, I'd do the same with my brother, too. But yeah, he was insane. There really was. Did they ever send him, Eddie? They sent Eddie to a hospital, right?
No, they sent Willie, but they didn't send Eddie. No, Eddie went straight to the hospital. Eddie didn't think he did anything wrong. Yeah. And then the wife is crying. There's some video of her crying. And, you know, she said she didn't know about the death of the baby. Well, it's not the death of an adult. You know, an adult can get up and walk away. A 9-month-old doesn't walk away. If the 9-month-old disappears, you're at a campsite in Florida, for criminy sakes. Where's the 9-month going? Somebody stole it or something, right? And you know that didn't happen, and you come home and all the family's acting weird. Don't tell me you didn't know that. Sorry. You know what you live with? Come on. If you had a nice, normal family, what's normal? I know, but if this had not been occurring in your family, you wouldn't automatically think, where's the kid? What happened? Knowing Eddie and what he's done to these children and his wife in the years, there's a missing child. Aren't you automatically going to look at Eddie and be like, where's the baby?
Yeah.
Just a little fired up over this one. That's all. I'll calm down.
It's cognitive dishonest, right?
There's little details I didn't put in here, but one of the kids that were taken into custody by the state earlier, when they turned 18 and they got out, where did they go? That's right. Right to Florida to be with the family. Now, escape, my young friend. What are you doing? And I know they don't know any different. I get it. I do. So thank God Charlie was only 18, and thank goodness he spoke up, and maybe that helped him have somewhat
a better emotional break from his family.
Mm-hmm. But then Eddie Jr., the oldest, was like, I'm out of here. You guys are, you know, mm-mm. And then he tried to help the family, and then, you know, Willie and Pixie didn't go back with him. Charles also said in that interview that Pixie was truly madly in love with her father.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when Otis, the uncle of the children, said that Joel had said he'd never had sex with Pixie, who's his wife, that would make sense then, that Pixie might have been in love with her dad. But
I'm sure she was.
I wouldn't even say that's love. I would say
Stockholm syndrome, maybe.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. Or trying to please him because you don't want him to beat the holy living hell out of you.
Now, how many years did they go to a school?
Well, as far as I can tell... They were in high school because that's when, I think it was Sherry, was that her name? Got the tar beat out of her in the bedroom because she talked to a teacher. Another one of the sisters did that too, and that's how they first were tipped off. But, you know, they'd come and try to get the kids to say they were abused sexually, mentally, physically, and none of them would crack. So you can't...
Or scared shitless of their dad. Yeah, of course they're not going to cry.
You can't go and arrest somebody just because somebody said something. Like, you have to have some proof of what's going on.
God, it would be nice if you could, wouldn't it?
Well, I have a few that make that list. Just for a short stay.
Kind of how the witch trials
just
happen,
like a 30-minute, 30-day stay in a lock-up house. 30
what is
days.
It, 50-51s? Isn't that what Britney Spears was on?
Yeah, yeah. Didn't put this in there because I couldn't figure it out. But in the show, the way Joel was killed was different than what I read up on. In the show, Eddie stepped behind Willie and had a gun to his head and was saying, kill Joel or I kill you, right? And I was like, that would totally be something he did. But then I couldn't find that in the writings. But see, Charlie was the one that they were talking to, so maybe Charlie told him that. But in the writings, it didn't say that. But of course, the writings were like court docs and things like that. So of course, they might not have that Eddie was there because Joel's dead. Willie is the son, and then Eddie. There's only three of them there. One's dead, and then, you know.
Gotcha.
Jen, we have any promos?
We do have a promo. This week, our promo is with British Murders Podcast. The host is Stuart. He also has a TikTok, if you want to go, a TikTok account. He's a very handsome man.
I was going to say, Jen said that to me. He is a cutie pie.
He is. He is. If you want to see him on TikTok, it is at Make Money with Stu, STU. Podcast is really good. I'd go definitely go take a look.
I would love to make money with Stu. I just like to make money, period.
Exactly. He basically just does British murders. So pretty awesome.
So until next time, Jen, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Vain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast, or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
My eyes are goofy and it's like I'm seeing pink and I can't tell if that's really on my screen or if it's just my eyes being goofy. I think it's my eyes being goofy. Like it's highlighted in pink and this not highlighted in pink.
Were you looking at something before?
I don't think so. I'm just looking at the screen, but who knows? It's me, Jen. I'm just getting old, maybe.
Could be.
While the Sextons. Okay.
So, Nico, what else is going on? What's new with you?
I know. I just have to flip these here.
I have to go to IKEA today with my family and I don't want to. I'm being held hostage and forced to go.
Right? I'm sorry. Take out right. It's mind-blowing, right? Right? Sorry.
Correct? Is correct the right term to
take
use?
Take all those rights
right?
out, Nico. I'm going to calm down. I just got to read what I wrote. See, I'm trying to fluff it all up, and that's what happens.
I know. That's what I did with the Albert Pinterest thing, trying to fluff it. And
Albert
all
Pinterest.
I did was put it. Flattened it down and sucked my soul.
During the trial, the TTLs...
Spit it out.
During the trial, the details were filled in, but some of the siblings contradicted each other. I'm going to say that again because I kind of slurred there.
You a little slurred. It's really hard.
Eddie's eldest brother, Otis. That's not right.
It's his oldest brother, Eddie.
Maybe Stu, instead of making money with Stu, he needs to share secrets with Kim and Jen so that we can get that money and also figure out what to do with TikTok.
I've been looking at TikTok. I think I have it. I can figure out how to do it.
I just don't know if
I'm goofy enough.
Well, I don't know how to apply it to our show. Because trust me, all the kids make fun of anybody that's over 25's even pushing it. I hear them. The teenagers make fun of people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. My kids do, too.
So I asked my daughter, I said, do you think Jen and I could do that? And they're like, no. And I said, but it would be a joke. We do it like and make it funny and make fun of ourselves. And then she's like, well, OK, but you can't be serious. I'm like, you think we'd be serious? No. But
no.
I don't know how to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's I've been like watching the videos and some of them I'm getting like there was one about reincarnation. Tell us how your kid, if they could be reincarnated mm-hmm. or tell me what they've said if they've been reincarnated. Some of them are duh, you know, just stupid. I can figure your kid was just talking trash is basically mm-hmm. what I want to say. Some of them are like really make you go, hmm, type thing. Another one I got drawn in was, did you ever do the 23andMe and find out a family drama that happened?
Ooh.
Holy cow. There's Ooh. Some big
really?
Things. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I sent you three videos and obviously you didn't watch them.
I haven't
them.
Watched them yet. I'm a little busy, Jen. I was
no, I know,
about Eddie and...
The three were 3 minutes. Three videos were 3 minutes long. So that's your shitter break right there. Anyway,
thanks, Jen. And
you're
on
them.
That note,
hi everyone. I'm Stuart Blues, the host of British Murders, a new true crime podcast which focuses exclusively on British murder cases and serial killers. The premise of British Murders is simple. Every Thursday, I cover the story of a British murder case or a British serial killer. Yes, we have serial killers here too. Each season of the show is 10 episodes, typically focusing on lesser-known British murderers, with a two-part special at the end of each season focusing on one of Britain's more notorious murderers. The format of British Murders is what I like to call bite-sized, as each episode strictly lasts between 15 and 30 minutes. If you're interested in learning about some of the UK's worst criminals, or you're looking to hear about some new cases that you haven't heard before, please check out British Murders, hosted by me, Stuart Blues. Available to stream now wherever you listen to podcasts.